like, when I'm going to go on stage, it used to be when I first started, I made the mistake of going, this is what I'm going to talk about. This is why it's going to be good. And now I go, what's the number one challenge in the audience? I know it's going to be different, but as they sit there, what's the thing that they're wrestling with?
It's one small step for man.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
We choose to go to the moon, not because they are easy, but because they are
hard. I have a dream.
You can't handle the truth.
7.
6.
5.
4.
3.
2.
1.
Super, 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 super.
Super you. Well, our next caller is coming in from beautiful Maui. Oh my gosh, we're so jealous. But we've got Laura on the call from Maui. How are you doing, Laura?
Awesome. How are you?
Very good. Very good. What questions do you have today?
So I've got three questions for you. Number one, you were named the second most likable author in the world. Why is that valuable? How did you do that? And how can other people leverage likability?
So there was a company in New York, Likeable Media, that ran a whole survey, a global survey, and I was fortunate to somehow get in the mix. I think that's the only reason that I got second, was somehow I was in an original cut that someone did to put out a certain amount of names. And then long story longer, it was a distant second to J.K. Rowling. But I think it's a good reminder to me that, you know, nice people don't finish last. Nice people finish happy. And so if you can make other people happy, that's actually good for business.
I support that. Nice people finish happy. Yes. I love that. All right. You ready for question two?
I'm ready.
All right. What gives a book its credibility, and how can a new independent author do it without the advantages that established networked authors have?
Well, sometimes the advantage of not having that network, and we've done our own books, we've done it through big houses publishing. And so sometimes it makes you get super creative. And so the thing that gives a book credibility are readers. And so the beautiful thing of the world we live in, success is a choice. And so if you have a good book that impacts not everyone, but impacts the base that you're trying to reach. So if you can get those 100 fans, those raving fans around your book, that's all you need to kind of have it start and take off. So it's really about getting to those 100 raving fans. And as an individual, without that big built-in base, as you mentioned, sometimes that helps you because you're more likely to reach out to the 100 people that you know that are fans of what you do to actually ask for that favor.
That's pretty cool. Thanks. All right, final question. I've personally experienced this. Now, entrepreneurs often find themselves torn between executive functions, operations, and marketing. I'm curious, what is the balance? Does it actually exist? And how can you create a winning company and brand without working 70 hours a week and essentially digging your own grave?
No, it's, I love that, digging your own grave. And so you've got to pick the parts that you enjoy doing, because most likely that's what you're best at as well. And so, and the whole reason you're doing this thing on your own as an entrepreneur is because you enjoy and you want to have that impact. And so a lot of entrepreneurs, you don't have that operational capability. You might be the visionary, you might be the creative. And so you need to try to hire someone, even if it's just a part-time person, to help with that operational piece so that you can focus on what you do best. Now, most entrepreneurs, whether you like it or not, if you are the main entrepreneur at the company, sometimes you can tag team it so you can offset each other. Someone might be the technical person, you might be the visionary, someone might be the operator, you might be the creative person. Is if you can tag team it, that's great. But if you're really a sole individual that's just doing it on your own, is sometimes you can freelance some of that stuff out, but you've got to remind yourself that even if you're a writer, let's say that that's what you do, at the end of the day, you've got to be the person that sells. And so that's, it's not just creating the work, creating the book, creating the music. It's actually, you're the forefront person that's going to have to sell. And selling has a dirty word, but it's really about selling. And also in time, as you grow, attracting the right talent. So even though it's not your basic strength, you also need to understand that that's part of your role as an entrepreneur. But the longer answer to your question is, for me, I do not organize my schedule well. So then I'm fortunate to, at the beginning, I'd outsource that to some artificial intelligence to help manage my schedule. But then in time, as we grew, then I could bring on a chief of staff or someone that can help manage my day-to-day schedule. Because what you want to do is you can't do it all. So it's about finding that harmony, not balance, and figuring out who you can surround yourself, whether that's part-time, whether that's an intern, whether that's a full-time employee, or if you can't afford any of that, just write out a list, what you enjoy, what you don't enjoy, your strengths and weaknesses, and make sure you always play to your strengths. Because if you don't play to your strengths, you're going to lose as an individual and your business will suffer and ultimately lose.
Awesome. Thank you. That makes a lot of sense.
Now, these are great questions. I'm going to turn the tables on you. First of all, sounds like you've got a book out. So what is the book? Let us know. What is the book? It's the author of Six Habits, right? Teaches you how to create the life of your dreams without changing who we are.
Yeah, absolutely. So the book is The Six Habits, and it's all about the habits that we need to cultivate within our relationship with ourself in order so we're able to become the best version of ourselves and happiness becomes a default. Our ability to reach for our dreams becomes so much easier and more accessible. And I wrote a book that's loaded with practical wisdom, tools, workbooks, like highly applicable knowledge. It's not abstract. It's very, very pragmatic. And yeah, this has basically been the source of my obsession for about 18 months now. And it's the most awesome thing I've ever done. I changed my life. I moved to Maui because of it. And yeah, my research is just, it's changing my life, everybody's life.
And why'd you move to Maui? Because of it? So you could write, or just because you go, I want to be happy, I'm moving to Maui?
When you get a really solid relationship with yourself, crazy things happen, courage shows up. And I had always been the person that was like, well, I can't live more than a half an hour away from my mom. So I was always afraid to do it. And I would always travel and just be like, man, it would be so great to live here. And then, you know, I was busy working on all this stuff, testing all my theories on myself. And I was like, you know what? Nope. I'm doing it. I'm just going to pick up my life and move 5,000 miles away from everyone and everything that I love and just take a risk. I sold my dream home and here I am looking at the ocean every single day and hearing the waves lull me to sleep. It's awesome.
Awesome. And this question's kind of like picking your favorite child, but of the six habits, you had to pick one for our listeners to hear. What's the one habit that we should all know?
I think it would be acceptance. Acceptance is something that people largely struggle with, and that's, it's not the most accessible habit. That would be gratitude, but the most impactful habit is acceptance. When you can truly unconditionally love yourself, you essentially give yourself the power to be your own superhero without even thinking. It stops being hard.
Acceptance of yourself and also acceptance of others. How can our listeners learn more about you, about your organization? Where can they go?
If you visit thesixhabits.com, the word six is spelled out, thesixhabits.com, you can learn about my book, my upcoming TED Talk, my coaching opportunities, like all the different things that I can do to make your life better. I got loads of freebies on there too. So you don't even need to spend a nickel to get loads of my wisdom.
That's awesome. When's the TED Talk?
Well, there's a pandemic, so it was supposed to be actually a couple weeks from now, but they moved it to tentatively October 2020 or March 2021, which is, you know, the right decision, but it gives me more time to prepare. I'm not that great at memorizing, so this was kind of like a, okay, I have more time. So there's a silver lining in every cloud, Eric.
Yeah, no, exactly. And then to be honest, here's what I learned, and we haven't done this. I want to do it where I go, here's what I learned on my TED Talks. Like, here's the mistakes. Here's the 28 mistakes I made. But one
Send me that email, Eric. I will read it.
But here's the short version advice. Tell stories because they're easy to remember so they don't have to memorize them. And I'll engage the audience. And so stuff you already know, but it's a good reminder as you go down that path. All right, I got to tell a story. And then I've got three stories. Here's the three stories I'm going to tell. And that way, audience is engaged. Plus, you don't have to memorize as much. You have to memorize a little bit for TED because it's 18 minutes. So you got to make sure you don't go over. Now, what city is your TED Talk going to be in?
It's actually from my home city, Boston. So really excited about that. It's TEDx MCPHS, which is the Massachusetts College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences. So this is actually their inaugural event, which is super exciting. I love that you said this whole thing about telling stories because that was my favorite podcast episode of yours, is the one where you're talking about public speaking and the three things you need to know. And yes, tell stories, tell stories, tell stories. I love that.
Oh, awesome. No, that's super cool. And then I love that you're in Boston. That's where I was for a while. So it's a great spot. It's a very educational town. So it's an amazing place to be for a TED Talk with the over 60 universities right there. What's the main, is it on the six habits or what's the, do you have a title for the TED Talk?
Happiness is Complicated is the working title right now. And the habits will be mentioned. But the thing is about the habits, they're a means to an end. They're not the end. The end goal is to be happy and to liberate ourselves from the trappings of what other people told us that happiness is, and to give us the permission and courage to define it the way we truly want to, and then to set us up for success within the right tools, like the habits that can actually help you get there. So I'm going to be talking about exactly what happiness is, how we can define it correctly, give ourselves permission to define it according to our own terms, and then really give people some framework so they can actually get started right away on creating a better life.
Oh, I love that. I love that. I love that it's not like this is how happiness is defined. You define it and allow yourself to define that. That's fantastic. I think everyone really needs to hear that. So we'll make sure push that out when we know the exact date. Obviously, we're wrestling with certain things beyond our control, but mm-hmm. we know a lot of people will get a lot out of that. So just as they did from you calling in. So thank you so much for calling in.
Truly a pleasure. Thanks for talking to me, Eric.
Hey, this is Andrew. Today's review is from Fernando Chevry. Love the format and listen to it on the way to work. I love the 7 Super Tip episodes, as well as when the host gives us insights on shows covering topics like side hustle or public speaking. Thanks again for the review, Fernando, and keep those reviews coming.
Our next calling guest is from Chicago, Illinois, Jake Pelletier. Is that French? What is that?
It is. So French and then French Canadian, and then it's been American and New England for the last 3 generations have been from Maine and Massachusetts. So good French name to have.
Love it. Well, I lived in Boston for a while. I lived in Chicago, so we're connected like that. So
there you go.
I love it. What kind of questions do you have today?
So I had a few just kind of fun ones for you, and then wanted to get into some business ones from when I saw you at the keynote. There was a few things that I had that really stuck out at me that I thought we could chat a little bit more about today.
Yeah, let's do it. That'd be great. The keynote was at Schneider Electric.
Yep, that was the one in Lake Tahoe. We had the Peak Performance keynote that we were doing out there. So it was, very fortunate that they were able to get out there before everything kind of shut down. But that was a really great speech that you did there. So I figured since one of the first things you said was that caught my attention was you played hoops at Michigan State, and I'm a big basketball guy myself. So one of my favorite questions with people that I've never actually played with is I always ask them, what NBA player, could be former or current, does your game most resemble?
Oh, man. I love this question. This is good. so one of the reasons I was covering my high school basketball team, which a lot of people know, and then I was able to get a scholarship at Michigan State after putting on weight, working out hard, just kind of being that grinder that Coach Izzo loves, those kind of grinders. I'll kind of answer a couple. Kurt Rambis, LA Lakers, he just was willing to sacrifice his body. So whether it was me busting my teeth, I ran into a pole in this tournament in San Juan, shootout, I dove and just hit this structure, and the trainer almost had a heart attack. I got lucky. I hit it just the right way. So I just bounced right back up because the trainer was sitting there going, oh no, I'm going to be in a hospital here in San Juan with Qualman. And then Draymond Green's very controversial, but he's a Michigan State Spartan.
Oh yeah.
The only reason that he's been an all-star and an NBA champion is by just staying at it, grinding, going after it. And so that's the only thing I had, was making sure I knew the playbook, making sure that I worked hard. So my message to anyone out there is, as Walt Disney says, if you can dream it, you can do it. So anyway, yeah, that question, that was great. What else? What other question?
So just the other fun one that I had for you, you'd mentioned obviously playing at Michigan State, one of the best programs in the country. So who is the best player you ever played against?
Best player ever played against? Interesting. So when we lost my senior year in the NCAA tournament, it was to Grant Hill in the Duke team. Funny story there was we were told, hey guys, we're in Florida, don't go out in the sun. We're from Michigan. So we're like, oh my gosh, it's like 75 and sunny, spring break, it's March, let's get out to the pool. And they're saying, don't go out in the sun at all.
And I sat on the bench, so it didn't matter. I'm like, I'm going out in the sun. It's not going to matter if I get sunburned or drain my energy. But one of the starters was with us, and he got pretty sunburned. So it's quite obvious we'd been out in the sun. So we all kind of wore undershirts, which is even looking back, even sillier, because then like you never wear an undershirt at practice. Why those guys wear an undershirt? You know, oh, because obviously they're out in the sun. But the reason I tell you that story is because Duke shows up and these guys looked like they'd been laying out in the sun for like 4 weeks. Like they had no care in the world that they seemed to be playing us. They were out getting bronzed. But we saw Grant Hill and I go, wow, that guy's a lot bigger than he looked like on TV. But we lost that in a close one, unfortunately. I still think we had the talent to win that game, but Duke, so they beat us. So he was probably the best person in a live game. Best player I ever played against was Magic Johnson. Because Magic, a lot of people remember this, when he was the reigning MVP, he actually got the AIDS virus, HIV virus. And so,
right, 92 or something?
92, spot on. And so, good memory. And so people didn't want to play against him. He had to quit. So the only place he could play was at Michigan State, his alma mater. So he came back as the reigning MVP. And then we were like, yeah, we can play against Magic. We're cool with it. Every day in practice, we got to play against the best player in the world at the time. So that was great. And he's just a great human being. He's got that smile, and he's just the real deal. What other questions?
Yeah, so the other question that I had for you that I've always kind of struggled with, especially when I'm presenting, you know, after we actually met in Tahoe, I went down to Austin and presented to about 200 CDW reps. And the question's around content selection. So, you know, usually we tell the story that like we want to tell rather than the story that our customer needs to hear. So what is your process for like evaluating and qualifying which pieces of information are relevant enough to be included in your presentation?
Man, good question. Next time you're in Austin, hit me up because that's where we are. So,
no kidding. Yeah.
A lot of prep work. So when I'm on stage too, it doesn't matter what you do. You're in sales, you're going on stage, you know, you're just about to go job interview. Is the more prep work you can do, the better. And the more you can involve them, the better, because by asking them good questions are better than great answers. And so asking them good questions before you get there, if they have the time to respond, like, and it can be as simple as what's the number one challenge you're facing as a business. So you just know what that lens looks like when you get there. Now, let's say you didn't have any of that prep work, or once you get there, the more you can have them talk, it's always better, because there's something that you'll unearth that either A, they didn't know, or B, you didn't know, or C, all the above. And so the less you can speak often in a sales meeting, I know it seems counterintuitive, the better off it's going to be. So asking them questions, like when I'm going to go on stage, it used to be when I first started, I made the mistake of going, this is what I'm going to talk about, this is why it's going to be good. And now I go, what's the number one challenge in the audience? I know it's going to be different, but as they sit there, what's the thing that they're wrestling with? What's the number one opportunity? Who have been some of your better speakers? Now for you, it could be when you get in the sales meeting too, it's just like, hey, what's your number one challenge that you're faced with? And then just start having them walk through it. And then where there's pieces, you'll start to pick up to where you can be helpful. So it's always like, how can I help? Then you can kind of plug those in. And then you'll have some anecdotal stories as well, where you tell that story and go, have you seen something similar? And the more that they speak about it and they're talking about how it can be a solution, because you could go, have you seen something similar? Because we had a client, they're faced with this, and then we did this, and it seemed to help them. Would that be applicable for your business? And you might already know the answer, but it's better for them to say the answer, because they are now starting to get that buy-in.
Right. Yep. You get that buy-in. Exactly. Okay, great.
Anything that you've seen on the front line, like when you're selling, they're like, this seems like a good trick, not trick, but this is a good approach that other people, other listeners of our podcast can kind of use.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I definitely think that when you go in there with like a canned slide deck that, you know, clearly has just been, you know, recycled over and over and it's not applicable. Even if what I like to do is honestly is early on, set the tone by just saying in the meeting, like, hey, if you guys could, you know, close your laptop, put the phones away, get that buy-in, and then just ask some questions. And a lot of times they're softball questions too. I'm not trying to stump everybody, but, you know, like you said, get that buy-in, get some hands going in the room, make it a little bit more interactive.
No, I love it. And then you might want to test this if you haven't. You're a sports guy. A lot of the people that you're speaking to might be sports folks as well. And even if they're not, but if you think of Pardon the Interruption, the show on ESPN, mm-hmm. there's a lot of shows that have this. It's like a rundown on the right. What they're going to talk about on the right is that you do your prep work, you get in there and go, hey, everyone, this is what I think is important for you. And you have a list on the right of the six. But what I want you to do is I want you to vote. We have a limited time here of 30 minutes, so let's put our phones away. Let's be focused. Let's just not go in the order that I think is of importance. Let's vote here, and you guys pick not only the order, but items that might not even be relevant.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, that would be really cool. And honestly, you know, it's a perfect segue into my next question, which was going to be kind of tied to, like, you know, death by PowerPoint. You know, I want to get away from using a lot of these decks because they're, you know, really dense. A lot of times they just contain too much information. So I was going to say, what do you recommend using? But I love that format, kind of like the PTI format of on the right and saying, hey, if we've only got 30 minutes, you know, vote for your top three or which ones, like you said, we could get rid of. That would be great.
Yeah. And then this is another question that also helps is, all right, guys, online reviews, it's usually 5-star. What we want to do is we want to give you a 6-star experience. I use 42-star just because that's a really weird number. People, when they hear a weird number, jumps out and go, hey, we want to blow you away with 42-star service. And when you have multiple people in the room, you'll, one, get a sense of the differences of opinion and also where they stand. So you get a sense, okay, this is where there might be conflict within this group, and also where there's synergy within the group. And then also, two, they're going to give you new ideas on how you can deliver a better service, a better product. But most importantly, it gets them engaged. And then they're trying to become part of the solution. So those are some other ones that are in there that we've found to help. So that's good.
Oh, that's great. Awesome. How do you convince upper management, directors, you know, C-level folks to embrace using a less familiar, perhaps a little unconventional, unorthodox way of presenting to, you know, powerfully land like a small number of big ideas? And if they kind of always expect you to just have this slide deck and you want to get away from that, what's like the best way to convince them that it's actually more effective?
I found that you want to just test. So you don't want to overwhelm that, understand that, hey, we're not going all in on this, that, and use other companies that do this as an example. So for example, go, hey, Google allows their employees 20% of their time to kind of test stuff. And I think mm-hmm. we're doing well on our sales presentations with this model, but I'd love with this certain account, not the super major account, but with this certain account that I'm going to go into, I'd love to test this method to see what works and what doesn't work. And it might fail yeah. miserably, but this is what we're going to find what success looks like on this test pilot I'm going to do. And I found that most organizations, they want to test. And these folks, a lot of the folks at the top, love when someone comes up and are willing to kind of do something new, like, hey, I want to test this, but always hedge it with, hey, look, we know we've got to get this done. We got to do this over here. I just want to test this piece on my own time, my own energy, my own effort. And most sure. of the time they're going to say, go for it. Otherwise you might start looking at another organization, but most, and I know the organization you work in, they're amazing. So they'll be open to that.
For sure. Oh, that's awesome.
Outstanding. No, this is great. Keep yeah. the questions rolling. These are awesome.
Awesome, man. So one of them that you touched upon, I was so glad that you did at the keynote in Tahoe, was about multitasking, right? You know, kind of the myth of multitasking. Do you have any other tips or tricks to share that, like, would easily be, you know, told to have your team focus on, you know, one task at a time to be, you know, make sure that they're doing it right and it's more efficient?
Yeah, no, I mean, if you look at all the data for multitasking, it's really switch tasking. And so your IQ can drop up to 15 points, which, as my dad says, and he jokingly says it, that that's a lot of points for me. When you look at the data side by side, it's actually more efficient and effective to smoke marijuana than it is to multitask. So here is a trick that you can do. It's not a trick, it's a test that you can do with your team. Take out pieces of paper. So they have a blank white sheet of paper, and then you have the stopwatch. So take your stopwatch. And so the exercise is, on a white piece of paper, write down, multitasking is worse than marijuana. And then after you write that sentence, I want you to write below each letter. So if you look at multi, under M, I want you to put the letter 1. Under U, I want you to write the letter 2. Under L, I want you to write the letter 3, and so on and so forth. And so you're going to write those numbers out. And so as soon as you're done with that last number, underneath that sentence, you know, I want you, you're going to hear me, you being you're the timer. So you're going to count out 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 15 seconds, or you can have a clock on the wall they can look up. They can look up the time when they're done. So they write down the time it took them to do that. Then you go, okay, here's task number 2. It's the exact same thing that we just did, but this time I want you to write out one letter and then put the number below it. So I want you to write out M for multi, and then put the 1 below it, then the U, then put the 2 below it. And so yep. that is essentially what your brain does when we're multitasking. And then when you're done with that task, I want you to write down the time. Now, most of the time, it takes them 20% longer to do the second task, and they're less accurate. So it's just a real physical way to show them that multitasking doesn't work, because again, it is switch tasking. Now, another fun one you can do, which is easier, you don't have to have paper and pencil, is have the people split off into twos and have them do a thumb war with their right hand. So they're doing a thumb war on their right hand, and then have them do a rock, paper, scissors with their left hand. So again, it shows them it's really hard for them to do two things at once.
Wow, that's so funny, because I literally had that same multitasking myth. So I'm making that a note. Definitely going to have some folks do that, maybe even have some of my reps do that in my team huddles, because that would be kind of a fun team experience to show that. That's awesome.
Oh, that's great. No, that's fantastic. I love it. That's really good. First of all, thank you so much for listening to the show, and thank you for calling in. I really appreciate it. Thanks
Absolutely.
For your patience on calling in, and appreciate everyone that calls in, but thank you so much for calling in. Love the questions about basketball. I haven't gotten those before, so that was awesome. Unique questions. Everyone has good stories. Do you have any funny story you want to tell? Any best story?
So, yeah, I've got a pretty good one of actually how I met my future wife. We were out at a bar here in Chicago, in Old Town, and I was with a buddy and got approached by this woman, this older woman that had like a clipboard and was taking notes, and she was asking me all these questions about how old I was, what I did for work, you know, my height, all this stuff. And she was actually recruiting people in Chicago to be on The Bachelorette. So she was from Los Angeles, going around Chicago looking for people to be on there. And she gave me her business card, you know, it said The Bachelorette on it. And I saw Danielle walk in the bar, and I took one of her cards and went over to Danielle. I said, hey, you know, this lady's thinks I could be on The Bachelorette. What do you think? And she took the card, looked at me and said, no, absolutely not. Completely shut me down. She told me later that she thought I had, like, you know, printed 100 of these in my basement, and this was like my pickup line. So I had to bring Sherry over to talk to Danielle and corroborate my story and, you know, let her know that I wasn't lying. And yeah, we've been together 4 years ever since. So that was a kind of a funny night that changed my life in a good way forever. So I emailed Sherry for The Bachelor when we got engaged in California. I sent her a picture of our engagement, and I said to her, hey, Sherry, you know, this is the first time that The Bachelorette has actually brought people together before. So it actually worked out.
Oh man, that's awesome. That's awesome. That's funny. Yeah. I was waiting. It would have been funny if your fiance said, no way, you can't be on that show. You got way too long of arms.
Yeah. She figured that out later pretty quickly.
Oh man, that's awesome. Well, this is great. So good to hear your voice. Thanks for calling in again. Stay safe, stay smart, stay sane. But thanks again for calling in.
Thanks, man. Great to talk to you. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to today's Super U podcast. This is Equal Man reminding all of us, until next time, it's not what we take from the world, it is what we leave behind.
7
6
5
4
3
2
1
Super, 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 super,
Super U.